Emerald City Comic Con has been a Seattle institution for nearly 20 years. It started as a one-day event at Questfield Events Center back in 2003 with an attendance of 2,500 people. Since then, it's grown to become a four-day extravaganza with nearly 100,000 attendees in 2019 before the COVID pandemic forced the convention to be canceled. Last December, ECCC returned with strict mask regulations and a limited attendance. This morning at 10 a.m., the doors opened for the 19th Emerald City Comic Con. That means you can expect a lot of people and superheroes, Pokemon, Doctors Who, and probably some Sailor's Moon in downtown Seattle through Sunday. Earlier, we checked in with Christina Rogers, Vice President of Global Comic Events at Reed Pop, which puts on Emerald City Comic Con.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we're back to having Emerald City Comic Con. Last year's convention was a little bit downsized. It had fairly strict health and safety guidelines. What's up this year? How does this year compare?
This year is a step forward to normal. We are instituting masks and requiring all of our fans to wear masks while on site. We think that's the safest and best way to proceed. We won't be checking vaccination or test status this year. We feel more comfortable about easing back on that, but you know, just looking at where everybody's comfort zone is, where cases are, we feel really happy moving forward, just asking folks to mask back up because it's an indoor event. We're a music festival for pop culture geeks. We have a little bit of everything, you know. Brendan Fraser is coming, which is my personal highlight. I'm very excited to meet him. We're bringing in Doctor Who guests, Our Flag Means Death. We have anime, we have One Piece, we have Pierce Brown and R.A. Salvatore. Like, whatever you're into, there's a stage for you, as it were. And we pride ourselves on being as encompassing and just fully embracing nerd culture in all of its aspects. We have Jinx Monsoon and Ben de la Creme coming.
Love.
Yes.
Love those queens. Yes.
Love it. So it's just, you know, it's a celebration of pop culture, but largely a celebration of the community. You know, I think it's really important to bring people together, and we really felt that absence over the last couple of years and that need to celebrate. And so doing that as safely as possible is just, it's paramount to my team and I.
I know that there's been a journey over the last few months over whether to require masks.
Yeah.
At the end of June, you announced that ECCC would be rolling back the vaccination and testing requirements, which you're sticking with. But also at the end of June, the announcement was that there would be no mask requirement. Of course, there was a big response on social media to that. Now you're back to requiring masks. What was behind that shift? And was the response part of your decision making?
Our community is always a part of our decision making. I think that's incredibly important for every company. We have to take our community into account and what they're requesting. And then largely it's the science. You know, when we were looking at rolling everything back, we were hopeful for a different space as the summer progressed. And then the summer progressed, you know, and we got to a place closer to the event where it just wasn't in the cards for us. We were looking at case rates. We were looking at, you know, just how folks were feeling about it and decided to bring back the masks.
You've also said that you're going to have mask stewards to help enforce proper mask etiquette. What does that really mean? Is that somebody that's going to kind of walk around and wag their finger at folks to make sure they pull up that mask?
Well, actually, the international finger wag for masks is touching the bridge of your nose.
Ah.
All event professionals, we are well informed on this. Yeah, actually, on top of our team and the crew that comes in to help produce the show with us, we're bringing in some additional team members, and that's their sole focus. So we'll have a couple at our Grand Hyatt venue. We'll have a couple at the Sheraton. We'll have a couple on site at the convention center, and they'll just be roaming around and reminding folks to mask up, please.
You know, I'm a fan of comics.
Oh, good.
I have spent my life playing video games and I love anime. And, you know, these kinds of events are just so beautiful to me because they bring together people with shared passions. But the community, with all of its amazing elements, it can also be intensely toxic in some slices. I mean, there's elements of misogyny and racism that crop up in these types of fan cultures. How do you handle encouraging a safe and supportive environment for everybody?
That's such a great question. We hold very true to our anti-harassment policy. That's the first step. We have one. We advertise that we have one. We call it out and make that a separate thing that fans agree to and our customers. Anybody that's coming to the show has to consent to that and understand. And then the second piece is when you involve the community and the whole community, it's easier for the community to embrace it. So we don't put on a panel for Black voices. We bring in Black voices to bring us a panel. We embrace the queer community, and they're hosting a really beautiful Pride Lounge for us where fans can come and find a safe space and just hang out together. That's from that community. So we go directly into those spaces and engage them. It's automatically authentic. And then they're bringing with them their people, you know, and I think that that really makes the difference when you're creating a space like this. You have to have those voices as a part of building it, not as an afterthought.
How did you get involved in this space? Did you grow up loving comics, or was this a job that came to you later?
No, I grew up a total nerd. Loved comics, Star Trek, all of it was just my jam. And I was always very sheepish about it. And then I would go to these things with my dad, and I always just felt a little uncomfortable. And I was like, man, you know, wouldn't it be nice if I really saw myself when I came here? And then when I got older, I went to a comic store, and the guys that ran the comic store also happened to run the show. And I said, hey, you know, I'd like to help. And that's how this all got started. Is I helped with registration my first year and saw the potential of creating a space where I could see myself in it. And no matter who was coming to the show, they could see themselves in it. And mm-hmm. We grow up nerds, which means you're automatically a little bit othered,
yeah. You
know? And so you know, being able to create this space, it's just an honor, honestly. Not to sound too mushy about it, but it's a big honor.
Back to the kind of the shape that the convention is taking this year.
Yeah.
Last year, attendance was capped at about 45,000 people. Mm-hmm. What sort of attendance are we looking at this year? Do you have a prediction?
I think this year we're going to end between 65 and 70,000. That's what we're really comfortable with.
And you, Christina Rogers, the organizer of this event, what's the number one thing you're looking forward to, the panel or the event that you're going to be like first in line for at Emerald City Comic Con this weekend?
It's got to be Brendan Fraser. There's no other for me. I've got to get a photo with him.
All right. Christina Rogers, Brendan Fraser, Stan, and Vice President of Events at Reed Pop, which puts on Emerald City Comic Con. Thanks very much for stopping by.
That's going to go in my email signature from here on out. Thank you.
Yeah. Update your LinkedIn. There you go.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Now, after this conversation taped, Soundside producer Jason Burrows and I got to talking, and I wanted to bring him in to share some of that conversation. Hey, Jason.
Hello, Libby.
So we both share a big nerd fandom. It's no secret. I'm more of a video game anime person. Well, your middle name is Megatron, legally.
That's right. And I love all of our local nerdy conventions. I'm a regular at both Emerald City Comic Con and PAX West, or at least I used to be before a virus totally changed all of our lives. And I'm planning to attend Emerald City Comic Con this year, but I've also been struggling with that decision because I have people in my social network who I love and who I respect who have disabilities. And a lot of them are saying, we cannot go back to large in-person events like this because it's dangerous. And in fact, holding a Comic-Con right now is just making it more likely that people with disabilities will have to continue to stay at home and stay isolated.
And that's really hard to hear. I mean, we're still in a pandemic after all, and the BA.5 variant is very transmissible. Our case counts have been higher lately than any peak during the last 2+ years, except the Omicron spike over the winter. King County's health officials did say on Tuesday that the BA.5 wave has probably crested here, which is a bit of good news. So, Jason, you talked to some of these folks in the disability community to get their perspectives on going to big events. What did you hear?
Well, first up, I talked to Jennifer Kretschmer. She is a disability advocate, an award-winning author, a TV producer, an actor, basically a multi-genre geek extraordinaire. And this is what she said.
I mean, it's just a perfect storm of of risk factors, and every single convention has had outbreaks. Some are worse than others.
She has been sharing what I have been seeing anecdotally, that bringing people together in a large group like a convention spreads the virus. And she said that she's frustrated by the CDC loosening COVID guidelines recently.
Yeah, according to the CDC, people who are exposed to the virus no longer need to quarantine at home, regardless of their vaccination status, but they should wear a mask for 10 days and get tested for the virus on day 5.
Jennifer says that public health messaging basically equates to the CDC throwing up its hands.
I think a lot of it is we've had the CDC put the onus on individuals rather than focus on community prevention and taking care of other people.
I also spoke with Jay Justice, a game developer and disability consultant. She called out the organizers of these conventions. There are many that have chosen to drop guidelines like vaccine checks or mask mandates, only to partially bring them back when fans get angry.
There's no sense of, okay, this is what we have to do to be safe. It's just, what is acceptable to sell tickets? That is the real thing we're seeing here, that if people are not pushing and fighting and demanding more safety precautions, we will not get them.
Okay, so kind of what we saw with the Emerald City Comic Con dropping its mask requirement back in June and then bringing it back.
Exactly. And I asked both Jay and Jennifer about the success we saw with virtual and hybrid conventions in the early years of the pandemic. Jay says she understands why conventions are now hesitant to keep everything online.
I know that it's very hard to convert a click to an actual tangible dollar. And that is the struggle that a lot of conventions have been having. Like, yeah, we can have these online things, but without that sense of urgency, you don't get the same amount of connection. And now you're competing against so many other events that are in person. So if someone can be online and just watch that trailer later, where's the sense of, I gotta do this now?
And there are a lot of small businesses, I mean, artists, writers, creators who depend on these conventions to sell their merchandise. And not being in person makes that all the much harder.
It's true. You can try to sell things online, but it's not quite the same as being right there in person. And Jennifer is also frustrated to see that virtual options for Comic Cons and other events are disappearing as we move back to big in-person gatherings. Those alternatives were big game changers for people with disabilities and weakened immune systems and others who need to socially distance for health reasons.
Hybrid events, having virtual components, having virtual events, making sure you have webcams in rooms and ways for people to access and participate from home, ways for panelists to participate remotely so that you're including disabled panelists or panelists with young kids. You know, there are so many, accessibility really does help everyone in so many ways.
I can hear the emotion in Jennifer's voice. And to be honest, I am feeling weird because I have been going to gatherings like concerts and out to eat at restaurants indoors. I do rapid tests regularly because we all work together in the studio here at KUOW and I want to keep people safe. But I'm able-bodied and I don't have pre-existing health conditions. And it does feel like we're simply accepting the presence of this virus as endemic in our lives and moving on. At the risk of sounding corny, Jason, does that make us bad people?
I don't know. I have been wondering the exact same thing.
I reached out to an expert about viruses to hear what the science is saying right now. David Dowdy is an epidemiologist at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He says concerns about our public health policy from folks with disabilities are totally valid.
I think that it is true that people who are at a higher risk of getting sick from this disease through no fault of their own are in some ways getting left behind.
On the other hand, he argues, we can't expect everyone to put their lives on hold right now. He thinks there's a balance to strike to give people the freedom to live their lives as much as is reasonable while providing extra accommodations and accessibility options to keep people with different needs safe.
There's always, I think, going to be that twinge of guilt. And I think if we're not at least considering the effects that we're having on other people with our actions, then we're probably not living things the right way. But also we have to recognize that we've all been through a lot and give each other a bit of a break. You know, like we're all trying to figure this out together. Nobody's got the right answers.
So even epidemiologists are saying we don't have the right answers. This is just life now.
Yeah. I walk around often feeling worried about different situations I put myself in and what kind of COVID exposure I'm potentially creating. It's so Seattle to say this, but I just always feel a little bit guilty. But back to Emerald City Comic Con. Jason, final question. How are you feeling now going to the convention?
I feel conflicted still. Anecdotally, a lot of people that I know did get COVID from the last convention that they attended. One of my best friends was down with COVID. And on one hand, I am covering the convention for Soundside, so there is the working excuse. But on the other hand, I really want to go. I want to see my friends and I want to see the artists that I've been missing. So, you know, that said, I know that I'm not going to go on Saturday when the largest crowds will be in house. And when I am there, I'm going to be keeping my mask on at all times. Jennifer Kretschmer had one last message that I want to share about how we can all be better at this stage of the pandemic.
I wish people would think about the impact that you deciding to try and protect other people has, and deciding to encourage your friends and loved ones to be safe in social situations, or to say, hey, let's move that gathering outside, or hey, please keep testing before things. These are baseline things that have to stay part of it so that we can participate.
We're working this stuff out together in real time. Jason Burrows is a producer for Soundside. Thank you, Jason, for joining and talking this out with me.
Thank you.
And on the subject of accessibility, Emerald City Comic Con does offer a digital-only ticket for $15, which includes access to live video panels streamed all 4 days. If you're going to the con this weekend, let us know what your experience is like. Email us at soundside@kuow.org.